Welcome to the Write for a Living podcast, where I interview writers of all kinds who are writing for a living. And today I'm talking to Marjorie. So welcome to the show, Marjorie.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So the first question that I have, I'm going to jump right in. I know from following you online that you are a scriptwriter, YouTube scriptwriter, and copywriter. And I'm wondering about your backstory. Like, were you always interested in writing, or like, how did you actually get into that? Can you share maybe, you know, the complete story of that?
Okay, the long version of this. So I wasn't necessarily like into writing per se growing up. I was very into art, more drawing and visual arts than anything else. But then, you know what, like I was a conventionally smart kid. So I always had that path of like, I'm going to study, I'm going to get into college, and then I'm going to make a bunch of money, right? And so I did. I was like, I got into architecture school because I thought it was something respectable enough that it seemed like I would make money, but it was still a little bit artful, right? So I got into college, got into a really good one, did all of that. And then I just started realizing that wasn't necessarily for me. And then the pandemic hit. And I was an intern for a while on a landscape design studio, because that's one of the things you can work with when you're an architect as well. And it was a field I liked, but I hated the workplace. It was quite toxic, but it wasn't that even this. I was like, oh my God, I have to work 6 hours a day here. What will happen when I have to work a 9-to-5? I can't bear it. I used to cry on the subway on the way to work. It was just so depressing. And I was so underpaid. And the worst part was that, you know, they did services for like rich people. And so a Vietnamese plant vase was way more expensive than what I was getting as an intern. And I was like, no way. I have to figure out something to do. And so I thought about doing something online, and writing was a very natural choice because, funny enough, I had thought about making money writing a while back, just because it was something which was above average. I don't say I was good anymore, because when I read back the stuff when I started writing online, it's awful. But I mean, compared to the regular person, I kind of had it easy. And I just got into Upwork, and I just started applying for any job. Basically, I didn't know what I was doing. And funny enough, my first long-term job was as a YouTube scriptwriter. But the people who hired me didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know what I was doing. So it was a crazy learning curve because, you know, after a while, and there wasn't like any course about YouTube scriptwriting. There wasn't even like good videos. Today, there are a couple of videos on YouTube about YouTube script writing, which was good. So it got to a point where I was like basically reverse engineering like scripts from like videos I had 1 million views so I could learn more. Yeah, but it was kind of a crazy process, and that's how I came to be here.
So how did you like with the YouTube script writing? And you just said you kind of like reverse engineered it. Can you share a little bit about your process of like how you actually studied those, and like when you say reverse engineering, what does that actually look like for you?
So I found out, because funnily enough, like the first YouTube scripts I had to do were a mix of clips that I had to transcribe and voiceover that I had to write myself. So I found out that you can get the transcription, you know, by pressing like the three dots and then open transcription, etc. Nowadays it's even easier because with ChatGPT there's an extension I use. So I just copy and paste. And now with ChatGPT, I ask it to tidy up the transcription because there's no punctuation. For example, I have a prompt for this. And then I look at it and I try to understand what each phrase is doing, especially in the hook. The hook is where this is like most vital, because after you just for a while, you start to see patterns. So for example, with educational videos, it's like you realize that they either talk about a desire or a problem in the beginning, and then they share a little bit of what they know about the topic, why they're on an authority on that, and then they make a promise. It's like, you know, here's 7 tips to do XYZ. I used to work with a lot of like information heavy listicles and stuff, and I like top luxury and stuff. I didn't write for top luxury, god no, I wish, but you know, channels that try to mimic those type of things. And you know, it was noticeable that they started either with a question like, did you know blah 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 blah, or a statement that was a curious fact, because it was like this, right? Like, did you know there is a city that costs millions of dollars to make and it's empty today, or something like this? Did you know that I don't know, China is building a 1 kilometer tall building, or anything crazy like that, because you're trying to get people's attention. And then with a listicle, they just say this, and then they say they're gonna show you, I don't know, top 10 something or whatever. So I make the, I try to go through this process, and then on the rest of the video is less clear, but you can see a lot of things. You know, it's a process of you trying to understand, if I'm a viewer and I'm watching this and I listen to this, what does that make me feel? So a good example was also a video about Pablo Escobar from a channel called The Fugitive, and it told the story like about his death, what happened right before. But it was very interesting because it wasn't framed in a normal way of like, Pablo Escobar is a criminal and etc. Yes, we all knew this, but the video actually started talking about how he spent his birthday alone, like, I don't know, 24 hours before he died or something like this. And it painted a picture. It made it sound and look so dramatic, and it made me feel empathy for him. And that's very important in storytelling. So this video is a masterclass in storytelling, because you see, not only like is the video telling a story that is compelling, it's actually making you feel certain things about the character. And another thing that's very important is when the video is clearly divided into sections, try to see what are they trying to do in the beginning of the section and in the end of the section, because you'll notice most of the time that, you know, in the beginning, they're probably gonna foreshadow something that's gonna happen in the end. And that they open loops, so you keep curious. And then in the end, they probably satisfy, or more or less satisfy, the loop they started in that section. But they immediately set up another loop for another section, you see. And that's how you start to understand how a script, like, there's a flow to a script. And there are certain things you can do to make it sound natural and to make it engaging for people so they don't, you know, hop off.
That was a lot. That was a lot of really great information. People are going to have to really listen back to that. I wanted to ask you, for anybody that doesn't know, what is an open loop? Can you kind of explain that?
Oh, of course. Yeah, writers, we keep talking about those things and we, you know, we just forget people don't know. So an open loop, it's an information that is unanswered. So let's say that you are reading a book and then in the middle, I don't know, you know, you're in the character's head and they mention something about their father, but you haven't heard about her father up until now. You know, she just thinks about, you know, something that, I don't know, he left his mom and her and whatever. Now you're kind of wondering, like, what happened, right? So, but with YouTube scripts, the way we do this, especially in the intro, as a way to keep people curious, is to mention something but don't say what it is. So it's very common, like in the YouTube niche, for example. Okay, there's one thing that all viral YouTube videos do, and it took me a long while to find out what it was. But after I did, I started getting hundreds of thousands of views. And you don't say what the thing is, because you're not going to reveal this. So this is an open loop. And the more open loops you can open, generally the better. Of course, they have to be connected to each other, because if you start to open loops that have nothing to do with one another, you're just going to distract someone. So, and what happens is generally you can have an open loop, the big one, that can be your big payoff that you're going to answer only at the end. But then you can have another small ones that you're going to answer until throughout the video. Because if you just wait to answer the big one, people are gonna get bored. So you have, it's kind of like a dopamine hit. So you always wanna, you know, satisfy people in some way by giving them information that they long for, because you kind of tease that in the beginning, that something happened, but you don't explain what it is. And then you show a little bit more, and so it goes.
Those were great examples too. As you were saying the examples, I was like, Yes, I'm like waiting for the answer. I'm like, oh yeah, it's an
I
example,
wasn't
okay.
thinking about anything specific, by the way. I don't have a YouTube secret to give you. It really just depends what the video is about, because that could be anything, really. That could be about anything, because there are many things that are crucial for you too.
And what do you think makes a bad script? Like, now that you have experience, what is like some of the things that you would do that maybe are cringy to you now, or like that you could look at a script from somebody else or like watch another video and be like, yeah, they needed to change this. This is not great.
So let me see. I'm trying to think about lots of common mistakes that I used to do and that I see, because now I see people's scripts all the time. There are some things that are very common. I feel like first in the hook, taking too long to get to a point that's interesting, because a lot of people go like, oh, this person was born in this and this and that. They start with boring information, and the hook has to be something very compelling. Like, this is the guy who destroyed a nation with X, Y, and Z. I don't know. But instead of doing this, they just go like, you know, X, Y, and Z was poor and blah, blah, blah. And we don't get, like, you have to give us a tease. It's almost like you're giving us a synopsis of a movie. Like, when you go and read what the movie's about, and then you're like, oh, that's why I want to watch this. But like this in one sentence, that's very important. And then you can, after you grab people with this, then you can, you know, set up a story of a poor person or whatever. That's what I see a lot. I feel like not paying attention, that thing that I told you about, not dividing your videos into sections. I mean, it's not that you have to have the video divided into sections per se, that on the video has to be written like chapter one, chapter two. But when you're writing before you write, it's good for you to know this, because then you can create a cycle that people can keep up. What I mean by this is, like, you know, it's, you start slow and then you have rising action, something that happens, the events go, and then you give someone like a bit of information that was very important that they learned for, and then you restart again. And also you make, you know, these sections more connected to one another, because generally what happens is you just start writing the script and it's a bunch of information, but there's not a flow, right? You don't tease stuff. It's important. People want to be teased. You want to be like, you know, say just a little bit and then give more information after. And another thing that's very important, and that's counterintuitive, and that I've known this for a while, but I remember a while back recently, I was still doing this, not in an obvious way, but kind of like in a more sneaky way, in a sneakier way, which is like giving too much information to people. Because something I came to realize, that you don't want to make a video with 10 tips, and they all 10 tips are super in depth, because people are not gonna absorb this information. Especially when you're writing about something, it's kind of like information, fact. This makes it boring, and the information slides right through our brain. And that's so important to be like what I was talking about Pablo Escobar. Take a sentence to talk about an emotion if you're telling a story, but even if you're giving tips for someone, maybe it's something that you felt, right? Talk a little bit about your problem. If you're helping people with someone and you're like, I don't know, I'm talking about writing, and I start telling a little bit of like how I struggled in the beginning and how discovering this next step helped me. And then I give the fact, the information. Because otherwise, if it's just fact, information, and we tend to want to give people the most we can, but you kind of need those type of things in your writing which just help the reader, right? Absorb what you're saying. So a little bit of information, a little bit of like a story, a little bit of sometimes a question that it's an obvious question of like, you know how I felt at the moment? I don't know. Just something that doesn't matter. Something that's room to breathe.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think I have that problem too, where I overload people with information. So as you're saying that, I was like, okay, that's definitely something I personally need to look at. But when I was looking at your Twitter, you also had mentioned titles were a big thing for you, and that you were like always looking at titles and like redoing people's titles. Why do you think most people's titles are bad, and like, how do you make them better? And like, are you just automatically doing that now when you look at YouTube?
Yeah, not a lot of the time, but I was terrible at titles just a few months ago. I don't know, 6 months ago. And then I have to give a shout out to like Jake Thomas from Creator Hooks because I started reading his newsletter and I have his two Creator Hooks Pro, where he breaks down titles and etc. There's even a title generator that uses AI. And I just learned so much to the point where I got obsessed. And this is how I got to the point where now I'm on the YouTube homepage and I'm like, oh, that's so bad. Most of the times it's either, the title doesn't evoke an emotion or it doesn't create curiosity or it doesn't have, and that's related to not having emotions, which is it doesn't have qualifying words. I'm gonna explain what that means. So for example, it's something that Jake Thomas says, and that's amazing. Like most titles, good titles are a mixture of either curiosity and fear or curiosity and desire, because those somewhat are some of the emotions that move us the most. So if you want anything like, you don't know, how you can make 10K a month now or whatever variation of this, it's spoken in a desire, or how to clean your home in a lazy way. I don't know. It's appealing to that's also very powerful. Appealing to people's lazy side when you say something is easy and etc. And that's what where the qualifying words come from, because sometimes people will have titles like 10 kitchen gadgets must-haves, something generic like this. And why must I have this? What is the benefit? And that's a little like a copywriting trick as well, because when you start like studying copywriting, you understand all the YouTubers are doing is that, right? So I don't know, will it make your life easier? Will you regret not knowing? Titles like 8 Things I Wish I Knew Sooner About X, Y, and Z. This is so powerful because it gets at your FOMO. Or I just give an adjective to something like 10 epic books become a better copywriter, not just 10 books become a copywriter. And people like superlatives, and you need to have use them on your titles. And I understand that sometimes it's hard because that comes from my like a feeling of not wanting to be clickbaity. But you have to do if people are going to pay attention to what to do. People don't want to hear about things. They want to hear about the best things, the worst things, the craziest things, the most obscure things. And it's so funny because I was helping like a friend of mine with her YouTube channel. It's a Brazilian YouTube channel, by the way, because I'm Brazilian. And I was just telling her about this all the time. Like, you have to be go crazy. Nobody cares if you deliver value on the video. And if it's not total clickbait, if it's not like a lie, if it's just something that might be subjective, like the best books for X, I mean, you can't have that as a fact. You can say those are the best because those are the best for you, whatever. And she was kind of like this in the beginning, but now I see she's taken advantage of that to the fullest, where now she comes with like these absurd titles, but they're not lies, but they're so like, and I'm so proud of her. And like that started making like a lot of effect on her channel because she has a finance channel. She started doing stuff in her thumbnails like get 1,000, I'm gonna say dollars because, but it's not a curse. Like get $1,000 without working or whatever. And it's kind of like, of course, there's an explanation because she's talking about finance and stuff. But that's what people want to see. And those videos where she did that, or where she talks about, I forgot the name, but like when you buy stocks and the stocks give you money and stuff, those are the highest performing because it appeals to people's lazy side and their desire to make money without doing nothing. So it's a game of psychology. You have to know which emotions you want to causing people, and then you have to go into superlatives. As long as you're not lying, and your video is really helpful and it's not generic, nobody will even care about this. Maybe someone will comment like they did clickbait, but it's just like a stupid person who's doing nothing with their life because they didn't even elaborate. They were just like, whatever, you know.
So yeah, that makes total sense. And also that as you're saying that, I just thought, okay, that takes a lot of confidence too. And you sound very confident when you're saying, oh, well, that's just like, you know, somebody's just commenting and they don't really, whatever, just ignore their comment. But yeah, I don't know. That's just an observation. So my next question was for people that are listening to this, because it is a writing podcast. So people are going to be wondering, like, okay, if I'm listening to Marjorie and I really love what she's saying, and now I'm really interested in becoming a script writer, how would I go about doing that? Like, what would be the steps that you might suggest to somebody to take in order to just start or, like, get involved?
I have to think about this one just because it's like, don't do what I did in the beginning. Don't go to Upwork. Oh, my God. People will want to pay, like, $10 for a script. First of all, I think it's good. Try to understand about good writing first, the basics of good writing. And you don't need fancy courses for this. I see a very distinct before and after in my writing with a few courses from a guy called Shani Raja. And I bought them on Udemy. They were ridiculously cheap, especially because, like, Udemy adapts to your currency. So if it was in dollars, it would be, like, something ridiculous. And, like, those courses helped me understand the good things I did with writing without realizing, like, because sometimes it was instinctual, and it helped me become a better writer on the areas I wasn't. So it's good to look at entry-level stuff like this, where you understand sentence structure, where you understand rhythm, where you understand, you know, the basics. Don't repeat the same words. How to write in a way that's evocative and stuff. There are plenty of resources from this. So I think step one is just becoming a general good online content writer. Now, let's say you are already a good content writer. Then you have to start to understand how YouTube differs from other ways of writing. Because as I told you, there are very specific structures to write hooks, for example. And then there's stuff that you're going to have to realize with the niche that you're studying. So because different niches and formats have different stuff. So, for example, I had a client reach out a while back about consultation, and he was wanting, you know, feedback on scripts about basketball. Now, I had never written scripts about basketball, but I went in and I did my research, which is exactly what I explained to you. I tried to break down the video. And then I saw the video that I had to give script feedback on, comparing to the script over, like, a really high-performing channel. And I realized something, for example. It's like, the script that I was analyzing, the person was describing the movement and everything that the player was doing. Whereas in the video that had, like, millions of views, they didn't describe, they just described the rising action up to a climax, and then they showed the clip. Because when you show the clip, it's a sport, it's something very intense. You don't need to explain everything that the player is doing. So that's something that I was able to find out by looking at a specific niche. So actually, I think it's interesting. So you know, if you like YouTube, if you want to work with YouTube, you have to like YouTube, or it's better that you like YouTube. Think about the types of channels that you like, and then choose, like, I'm going to be a YouTube script writer mainly for these types of stuff. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to say no to an opportunity in the beginning that you have, because, you know, when you're starting out, just try to get experience. You're going to get to a point like I'm doing now, where I'm just trying to focus on one type of scripts and clients I want to have, so I'm better at it. But then you can choose a few styles and formats you like, and then you study them. You do those breakdowns like I did. And then in terms of getting clients, that's something very interesting. You know, nowadays you have platforms like YouTube Jobs and etc. But without experience, I think it's a little bit trickier. But what you can do is like reach out to people that you admire and you would like to work for with a sample. That has worked for me as well. Also, try to network with people. I've also got a bunch of like recommendations for people I just network. Like, I saw XYZ, like a friend of mine was like a scriptwriter. Didn't know him at the time. I was like, I didn't know any scriptwriter, so let me just talk to him. And I booked a call with him, and then we ended up becoming friends and talking about scriptwriting, and he referred me to someone else. So, you know, try to network. Network is good, but, you know, try to think about someone you would like to work with, and think about, you know, don't go with like the biggest channels ever yet. But they also don't go to the smallest necessarily, unless you see someone is like a business people, if you're working with people who already have businesses, because you have to find someone who's not big enough where they have plenty of people wanting to work with them and they're just gonna ignore you. But not someone so small that they're not gonna have the money to pay you as well. So I believe that's the best way to go about it. And just keep trying to do samples and keep trying to write scripts so you have a portfolio even before you work with actual people.
Would you suggest, like, for the portfolio, are you just writing out the scripts themselves, or do you think people should, like, write and then make their own videos?
That's a good question because I never created a YouTube channel. That's something I think about all the time. And of course, it's great to have that social proof, but also it's a lot of work. Unless you're willing to learn all the other stuff about YouTube. Because here's the thing, because I worked with many people and many times I wasn't able to get like the best results ever because the people gave up or they didn't have other people doing like other stuff that are important for YouTube, like the thumbnail design, the titles when I didn't do titles, the market research, because also YouTube has something like your idea. There's a process to choose your ideas based on like market research and what is most likely to get views with like the supply and demand. What that means is that like there has to be a number of people interested in that topic with that angle and etc., but not too many people making videos about it because then it's already a lot of competition. So there's so much about YouTube that unless you're like willing to learn all of those things, you might end up the risk of like, okay, you become a good script writer and you're great, but then your videos, like they have terrible thumbnails and terrible titles and whatever. And that's not a problem. If you really want to start doing this, you're not gonna be great at everything in the beginning, but you have to be willing to do YouTube because you want to do YouTube, like the whole thing. Otherwise, I think doing specific samples is perfectly fine. And also something like, if you get to a point where you're good and you can get to someone's video and be able to point out where they could improve, that's also something very good. I already got clients like this where I was like, I would record a long video talking about scripts or titles and etc. and be like, it's very good because you also compliment the person, say the good stuff so they feel good about you, but then you're like, I think that if you did X, Y, and Z, it would be better, and etc., etc. And then you show what you're doing. Now, of course, I have done this other times where it didn't work, but I think it's a great approach for you to have in the beginning. And if you can have profiles like on Twitter and stuff, and you network with the person a little bit before pitching them, because don't go just trying to sell your services like this. Like, do this from a place where you're just trying to help someone, and if they end up hiring you, it's okay. Because people feel the clinginess of the energy when you're like trying to cold pitch them and you really want to work with them. And that really puts people off. I don't know how to explain why. Like, I believe in energies and spiritual stuff, but also there's a psychological component that comes through. And honestly, now that I just don't give two shits about anybody, of course, I'm not like that all the time. I do have the people I really want to work with. But I mean, I've been saying no to a lot of people. People come after me like a lot now. And of course, that also comes with like being a script writer for more than 2 years and having the knowledge and showing the knowledge. It's not just magic. But have a good balance between trying to show your work and be nice and be helpful, but also not being too clingy.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's kind of like when I'm sure we've all kind of had this experience of when somebody kind of likes you, but they're too much, you know what I mean? Like maybe they want to date you or something, but it's like they go way over the top and you're like, please just get away from me right now. It's like that. Which sucks, especially for somebody if like you have the experience and you really do want to work for them, but you're like, I know what you mean. So when you talked about like the scale, this is something that I had written down for notes. You talked about like, and this is something that I think all when you get into writing or when you get into any creative service, As a freelancer, or if you're starting your own business, you'll maybe start off at the low end of getting paid, and then you'll quickly notice that you could probably make more by charging more and like getting different types of clients. So what do you think is like the low end of getting paid for script writing? Like, what does that look like as opposed to like the higher end? And like, how did you kind of move up in that direction?
Well, I can only talk about myself, and I'm not even the highest one, honestly, but I might be one of, I don't know that many script writers as well. I know other people who are more or less on my level. And of course, there's George Blackmon, who is the father of all of us and who's above all of us. So the thing is, when I started, I was getting $10 per script. Please don't do this. But the reason I was doing, I understand, is like, I live in a third world country with $10 a script, making 30 scripts per month on the time I was able to do this. And nowadays, I don't do this. I think the quality drops as well. Like, I was getting more than minimum wage working half the time. And that comes from someone who was an intern, who was making less than half of that. So when I started, because of the circumstances I was at, I was kind of like, that was cool. But I don't know how to say it. Like, I'm trying to think of other people that I've heard about. Like, there was this client who hired the scriptwriter, and he hired one scriptwriter for $30, and the scriptwriter was very bad, for example. And then there was another from $80 who was a very good writer, but they weren't necessarily knowledgeable specifically about YouTube. But that's much easier to fix. Like, a few consultation calls with a client and someone like this, I can fix this, for example. So those are the prices I've heard about. Now, my rate, I charge, should I say how much I charge in this interview? What if I change format? Because I'm always trying to change format. So that might be updated. But right now, I charge $500 for a 10-minute video script, which also means that if the video ends up being like double the time, it's like double the price. Sometimes, since it's one video instead of two, I might be a little bit like, okay, it doesn't need to be it's exactly double, but very close to that. And, you know, I think it's a really good rate if you stop to think about it. But it really takes me some time to do this. It also depends on the niche, because how much money you get, it's also depending on like how the real question is how much work you're putting into it. Because another decision I made was like to work with clients in niches that are it's easy for me to talk about, and clients that give me a lot of the research. So I'm trying to maximize the money with less time, because it also made a difference. Like, in the beginning, I would accept everything, and then I ended up having to do research about criminals or Chinese engineering or stuff like this, and I wasn't even getting paid enough. So you also should not just take into consideration like the money per se, but actually how much time does it take you to do this, if you're knowledgeable enough, if you're even going to enjoy researching about this, because all of this makes a difference in your enjoyment. And the reason like I'm able to charge this much right now is because I started believing in myself. Like, a few months ago, that would be crazy for me. But I've just been exposed to an environment on Twitter where I met a bunch of people who are like, you can always charge higher. You can always charge higher. And you can, of course, occasionally you're going to get someone who's going to try to give you less money. And now I just say no. Like, a guy approached me and he was like, how much for a script are you doing? And I was like, 250. And he just said, what about 50? I just said, no. Come on, I give you a price and you try to pay one fifth of it. Like, this person doesn't respect you. That's also another thing. I mean, if it doesn't meet your budget, that's okay. Go find someone else, because there's a reason why someone who charges something which is high, there's a reason why they do this. It's just because I'm so obsessed about YouTube and I've been running for so long, I realize I can't charge, and there's plenty of people willing to pay me for this because I deliver quality and I have good feedback from my clients. So I shouldn't sell myself short. So of course, if you're learning in the beginning, you're not going to be able to charge this, but as long as you keep studying, and if you see that the feedback is positive, and you can always try to be rising a little bit more, right? Okay, now I'm doing this for this client. The next client who asks me, I'm going to raise $50. I'm going to raise $100, whatever. And I'm going to see if people pay. Because the moment you start finding people who pay without questioning you, which also happened to me recently, despite this guy, it just get like, whatever. I mean, if I already found like 3 people who paid me upfront for the script without even questioning me, there's plenty of more of those people in the world. So sometimes we think we need to take a job because we're not going to find someone else willing to pay. But sometimes it's not. Of course, if you're trying to make a living out of this, which I don't recommend, the reason I was able to do it is because I was in a third world country. If that's okay, it's good for you. You're going to become rich. If not, try to have some savings, because that's also where I am right now. Like, I don't feel pressure to work with people I don't like, because I know that with a few scripts, I can make good income and I have savings. And I just have also, like, I'm building a business, my platform online. I have several different ways I can go about making money right now. So it's a process, right? So keep improving. Always charge more for the next client and keep doing this until you're charging like spectacular prices.
That was really solid advice. I wanted to ask you about the time, because you had talked a little bit about, you know, how much time you really have to weigh that with what you're charging. And so how do you manage your time with like writing scripts and social media and all that stuff? Do you schedule your time, or like, do you just do stuff? Like, how does that work?
That's a good question. Right now, I'm just not doing stuff that I don't want to do. So I was very obsessed with Twitter. And if I had been less obsessed with it and focused more on different ways to make money, I would probably have more money now and more influence. So it also a thing of like trying to understand what is giving you results. I don't have like a super like fixed routine stuff where it's like I work certain hours every day and this happens and that happens. Like, my most productive time is the morning, so I try to use that for writing because it's the activity that demands the most for me, writing or researching. And then in the afternoon, I'm so sorry, it was my alarm. So in the afternoon, I have calls and stuff, which is like, calls kind of like drain my energy, but I like to talk to people, but it's not drain my energy in a bad way, like I don't like them. It's just that I'm very present in the moment and try to, you know, be the best for the client. But generally, I prepare for the call like in the morning or on another day. So I try to have activities in the afternoon that are not like super hard because my brain is already like mush or whatever. But going back to what I was saying, I think it's trying to understand what is actually giving you results and prioritizing that, because I realized that posting 3 times a day, every day on Twitter, wasn't helping my business. And it wasn't aligned with who I was. I'm a big believer on like intuition and stuff, but it's not necessarily like a woo-woo thing. It's just listening to your body and what you feel you need at that moment, because we tend to overlook this because we are like working and we need to do more and more. But if you listen to what you actually want to do, you realize the things are important. And also there's a technical side to it, which is like, okay, is this giving me results? The results I want? No. So maybe I should do something else. And then I should do less stuff. But that's also my philosophy. Like, how can I do less stuff? And also with that also comes with like being able to charge higher. Because in the past, I had to like write 30 scripts a month to make a living. I can write 6 to 8 scripts and do a, you know, consulting calls, which also take me less time to do. And I'm okay, and I make much more than I was making working more. So, you know, be mindful of what you're doing, what's giving you results, and go steady.
Yeah, you've mentioned a few times like the energy thing, and I just wanted to say that I really believe in that. Woo woo or not, I'm like, go full woo woo. I believe it. And I think that there's like, there is an energy thing where there's an energy thing where it's like you could almost lock yourself off to opportunities, or you can like consciously be like, no, I'm gonna open myself up to opportunities and see what happens. And I think that's one of the biggest things that changed for me in terms of like being able to like work for myself, was like just actually being open to it and taking chances and like seeing what happened. And I'm not saying like jump into it, and not have a backup plan or not have savings or anything. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying be open to it and having like this kind of like open energy. I don't really know how to explain it, but I feel like it's a thing.
Yeah. I agree 100% with you. And also a big component of my success was that I worked with someone who's a coach, and we work with like my limiting beliefs on money, but also my energy with things. Like, you have no idea how much some of your personal stuff, the way you were raised. And it's not just the, you know, the common things people say about the topic of like hearing like money is evil or something like that, because I didn't grow up with this, but I did grow up with a lot of money struggle and where I felt powerless. And that was something. And also I had to start dealing with guilt that was coming up with me because of my success, because it was like, okay, I'm here. I work a lot of the time. I just work like 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day, and then I can do whatever I want. And I get all this money that's more than anyone else I know. And my friends are like making a third of what I make, but they're working like 8 hours a day, and they have to go to the job, so they have 2 more hours of transportation. And that was always blocking me without me realizing, because when you feel guilty for stuff, and it's so crazy that you feel guilty, because that should be normal. Like, who said that you have to work all these hours to make like shit money? The way society is working right now with this, it's so bad. You have to want that everybody to be able to, you know, make a living in a healthy way. And there's so much inside of us that we don't even realize that our brain's blocking. And also we don't believe, like, who's going to pay? Am I going to charge all that much? I don't know enough. And you know a lot. I mean, if you've been doing stuff for like 6 months to a year, you know a lot. And I was realizing how much I knew, just because I had to start writing down stuff. Like, I was writing a masterclass, and the masterclass was like huge, and I was trying to make it small, and I had to make it smaller then so it would become simpler. So there's so many things, and you talked about the confidence thing. That was a process, right, of like working with this coach and having mentors saying, yes, you can do it. Yes, you can sell that high ticket service again to another person, double the price. And just trying to do and see what happens. Like, and as you said, you have to be open, you have to expose yourself, and then you have to try to do stuff. And if you get a no, that's okay. But you, even if you don't believe in yourself in the moment, just try to go with it and see what happens.
I agree. My last question for you was, or I guess second to last, we had about social media, because that's kind of where I found you, was on Twitter. So how do you think it's important for people that are starting to get online and get on social, or do you think that it doesn't matter that much and they should like you said, build their experience and then like reach out to people? Does social matter, or do you think it matters just later on?
That's a good question, and I'm thinking about this a lot. I don't know if I have a straight answer for this. I have pros and cons. Because the thing is, like I told you, you can run the risk of getting yourself too much into it, where it's becoming detrimental for you. That was what was happening for me. And it almost like, I'm going to say this actually, the bubble on X where I was, it almost felt like a cult sometimes. And it really was harmful for me in a way of like, if I wasn't posting every day, I felt guilty. If I wasn't getting engagement, I felt horrible. That was associated to my value as a person, and that's just stupid. Right now I can say, but it was very serious, and I really felt those things. And I also felt like if I quit, everybody would see I'm a quitter, and etc. And that's not good. So I would advise you, if you go into it, like, try to not go like this. Try to not hear what people are saying in the timeline. Take it so seriously. Try to look for legit people who are doing something outside of social media. That's the point, right? Because Yes, you should ideally have a good balance of those things. Like have a social media because it brings you opportunities, but also do stuff on the outside. And after I said all these horrible things about social media, it's like it really brought me a lot of stuff. Like if I hadn't got into it, I would be still like charging, I don't know, $30. Maybe I would have gone to $50 per script on Upwork, which is crazy, right? So everyone that I met on Twitter, like the people who, you know, when you meet guys who are experienced marketers or they're millionaires and they sold whatever the shit, you hop on a call with them and they give you great life advice. They tell you we can do it and they tell you you're a great writer. Also validation. Like you shouldn't need external validation, by the way. No one should. But sometimes it's important. That helps you believe in yourself. So I got a lot of opportunities from it. So if you can at work and if you can hear people that are legit, don't go into people who are like selling growth or they're talking about engagement or they're talking platitudes, no more self-development stuff. No, look for people who have real business or have worked with people who have real business like outside of social and try to interact with them and learn with them because that is life-changing. But then, you know, if you don't want to post every day, don't post every day. Post a little bit. You know, try to understand the basics. But if you're not into it at all, there are other ways of doing it. But I see social ultimately as a kind of portfolio right now, which is like if you produce a few good pieces that do well, that can be like in your pin tweet. Like my pin tweet right now, it's a thing that I really like that I wrote that gave me a lot of credibility. I actually got clients from that post. And, you know, it's also a place where I can network with people. But then if I'm not into it, whatever. And I'm doing stuff outside of it as well. So, but if it matters in the beginning, if it's fun for you, if you want to do this, because in the beginning I was really excited about this and you can do it, see what happens. But that's not necessarily essential to do this, but you're gonna have to grind a little on like freelance platforms to build your reputation because that's also another way to build a reputation. I have another friend who's a script writer. That's how he builds. If you go to his Fiverr profile, it's just many, many great reviews and stuff. And in a way, it serves the same purpose of like my social media stuff. It's his portfolio. It's the place where people can see that he's legit. So there's not one way to do it. And if you do it, be careful. That's what I have to tell you.
And I know we just talked about it, but where can we find you? If somebody's listening to this and they do want to check out your socials and like maybe get in touch with you, where can they find you on social?
So Twitter at Marjorie Soares with two S. I don't know if you get you leave it written down. I also have, you know, a newsletter I'm planning to go back to. The whole idea is I do what we talked about. I take videos who have over 1 million views and I break them down, the parts I find most important because that's a way I really like to teach people and understand and help them because I think it's very actionable. Because when you're going to like learning how to write and stuff, people will give you all these concepts and it can feel a little overwhelming. But I realize that helping people with frameworks is the easiest way to go do this. That's why I also have a library with a few hooks and I give clients. Look at this hook from this channel that I broke down here and try to mimic it. Like what each part is doing. And it's just much easier than trying to become a good writer. Because honestly, it took me like 2 years to become a good writer. You can shortcut this by just trying to mimic with like what people are trying to do. And it's not copying word by word or making a video about the same thing. It's just the idea, okay, they're talking about a bold statement here. They are talking a little bit about their experience. They are promising something and they are explaining what their benefits of the this is. So that's my idea to make something very actionable that people can take away and, you know, write better scripts.
Okay, I'm gonna have to sign up to your newsletter. I looked at the page today, like right before we got on here, but I'm gonna have to go back and put my email in and like look at the newsletter.
Okay.
But those were my questions, and this was so awesome. I really believe that this episode is going to help a lot of people understand more about what is script writing, how to get into it, pros and cons, and like all of the things that you talked about. And like, you're clearly very knowledgeable about storytelling, about how to structure scripts and all of that. So this was just so valuable. Yeah, like thank you very much for spending the time. I really do appreciate it because you didn't have to, and you did. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. I mean, that's awesome for me too. And it's just, I just like talking to people, first of all. So that's something. But it's also a way for me to talk and share what I know. I'm happy to do this. And I want to do more of those things because I'm a writer, but I even like talking more than I like writing. You probably notice it. So I think this is all in good fun, and I hope I can help some people with this.
Awesome. Well, we will put your or I will put your links in the description. So anybody that's listening to this, the links will be in the description of the video and then also in the podcast area if you're listening on a streaming platform.